Welcome to Carnivore Theology, a podcast that answers questions about the Christian faith to help you grow from milk to meat into wise, skilled, world-changing followers of Jesus Christ. With theologian and pastor Chad Graham, author and pastor Al Desjardins, and me, your host, Steve Bastian. This week, we get a glimpse inside the heart, mind, and ministry of a contemporary worship leader. Hey guys, it's great that you're out here on Vancouver Island. We're hanging out here at Camp Guanos, and
And it's terrifying. Is it always this scary to be surrounded by this many wild animals? I mean, this is ridiculous. Well, or Steve, is this the ministry? Were these previously children?
I feel like I'm in an episode of The Walking Deer.
They just keep coming. That's the thing. They keep coming at you, and I am afraid, but I'll try not to show it.
Okay. Well, that's why we've kind of locked ourselves down into this little area over here. We're both armed, so that's nice. It's Steve's armed, and I'm armed.
You're actually in a bunker. See, we're more hanging out in the main field at Camp Funnels, where all the deer are. But you guys are in your armed bunkers, and the supplies are not We're forced to eat the deer.
I'm just really glad that you guys have this many supplies. We were trying to duck down behind the big inflatables, but they just stomped over that.
Chad and Al, we chatted a few minutes here with Russ. I want to give you... I actually looked up Wikipedia here, and I have a bit of a bio, so you guys learn a little bit more of who he is. And
dun, 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 the bio from the internet!
So it may or may not be factual.
Does he really have a third eye?
According to Wikipedia, he does.
Yeah, must be true.
Russ Smith, he was the lead vocals and guitar with Hocus Pick, as all three of us listened to that way back in the day. Mm-hmm. A Christian rock band from 1989 to 1999. They toured extensively in Canada and the United States. Group released their final album in 1999, and they opted to spend more time with their families after a whole decade of touring.
Mm-hmm.
The song I'm So Happy has been said by some to be the greatest CCM song of all time.
All time.
He received heavy rotations in Christian stations.
Some said that. I was one of those people, so I said that.
Yeah. It was down to either that or Refiner's Fire, and it was so close.
It was so close, but Brian Dirksen's only one guy, and Hocus Pick, there were four guys.
And you met him in an alley, and boom, that was it.
Yeah. In 2007, Hocus Pick received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Canadian Gospel Music Association. Currently, and this is why we're here, Russ is working with Camp Kronos as their music and worship director. He leads worship for the camp year-round. During the summer, they can have up to 400 students a week. Q-Town, the name of the band, the worship band, they've released 15 albums since 1996. In 2012 and in 2013, they won the Children's Album of the Year with Here We Go and Live It Up. And Russ is passionate about music, and he comes to us with whole life experiences, and he is a really humble guy, considering that he, in the music world, is considered success, which is as rare as, the needle in the haystack. So,
I want to hear the funny worship leader story from you. You got all this touring experience, you've been worship leading. I want to hear the funny worship leader story.
I was thinking about this. I think the funny worship leader thing is that when I was living in North Vancouver, I was going to church there, and this girl that went to our church, her family were missionaries in Africa. So they were coming to visit and tell the church about what they've been up to and all this. And I happened to be leading music that week. So this guy, his name's Chuck, big, tall guy, asked me, hey, I have this interpretive African dance thing that I want to do. Could you please learn this?
I loved it already.
And you provide the music while I do this dance. I'm thinking like, okay, sure. So he showed me the song, and I played it, and he practiced, and it was all good. Then the actual service time came, and we do our worship songs. The last song in the worship set was like a three-quarter time kind of swing the arm song. And then we went into this song for Chuck's interpretive dance. I could not get out of the swing your arm three-quarter thing, which was not the style of the song he needed. So I'm playing this arm swinging thing, and Chuck's spinning around, and every once in a while I turn around going, what are you doing? Because he's trying to... It just didn't work at all. It's a hard song anyway in a Baptist church to do an African dance. But when your music leader screws up the whole song, it makes it worse.
So trying to put an African worship song into an Irish drinking song didn't really work.
I thought it did.
Good answer.
Expand your thought of the music.
And that inspired the song on our next album. No, it didn't.
Did you get to say something nice and spiritual, like, well, as the Holy Spirit was leading me during that time, I really felt that that's how God wanted me to do it?
I don't think I ever got that chance. I would like to, if I could say that now to anyone who was in the room then, that's why.
There you go. That's why. God had a better plan.
Yes.
Yeah, this camp is a really beautiful place. It's a spectacular setting here on the island. And obviously you get a lot of kids that come out here. And tell us a little bit just about your context here and the kind of ministry that you're involved in.
Yeah, I'm thankful that music is a big part of Camp Kwanos. And the kids that we have that come to our camp, about half have a church background and the other half nothing with church. And I think it's just great that we use music as a way to help draw kids in. So that most of the music we play at camp is our own stuff that we've made specifically for camp. That way, when people come in, it's part of the camp culture. And you get the kids who come in who have no church background, they might be coming in thinking, like, I'm not going to know what it's like, especially if we do this church thing at camp. I mean, what are we going to do? We're going to hear some guy talk about God, and I'm going to sing a bunch of songs I've never heard before. But it's somehow different when they're going, oh, these are a bunch of songs they haven't heard before, and they're camp songs that some of these other people know, as opposed to, oh, these are all like church songs that everyone here, or half the people seem to know because they go to church. I don't go to church. I'm on the outs. Somehow it's different, the fact that it's camp. So that's a big thing.
You invited me to come listen the one time, was it the youth camp? I think like 14-year-olds or something in that range. And it was really fun. The kids were dancing, they're jumping, there's the lasers and the smoke, and you know, but the kids are just singing their hearts out, these songs that glorify Christ, and that was the best part, is that, you know, and I knew a couple of kids there, so it was fun to talk to them there, and then afterwards when I saw them later, it was really cool. So
in your time in ministry that you've been through, like for doing this for a while, and seeing in the contemporary Christian realm, and also ministering within the church, over your period of time, what have you seen change in regards to worship over your time in ministry?
Well, I think what's neat musically is things have just opened up more compared to, I remember in the mid-90s when you had Delirious from England kind of hit around Canada, and you had these songs like Do You Feel the Mountains Tremble or I Could Sing of Your Love Forever, that at first people kind of looked at and went, can we sing this as a group of people, or is this just, I mean, this sounds like a rock song that, you know, I want to listen to and be encouraged by, but can we sing this as a church? And at first it was kind of strange. People got used to another style of music that at first just didn't feel like we could use, but now you look at that and it's fine. I mean, all those kinds of songs. And so it's been neat to see that. And at that time, mid-90s, was the start of Camp Kwanos making our own music. So we got to jump in there and take that same idea and make those kind of songs for our camp. And that's been neat to see that progress and be more acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were telling me that the new album put out this last summer was with a kind of a techno, hip-hop, electronica sound.
Yeah. So almost, EDM, electronic dance music. Which maybe we continue to push that then, that maybe people would have heard this past year's album and gone, can you do that? Like, does that work as for a bunch of people to sing as believers or as a way of worship? Does that work?
I can't say I'm hearing a lot of techno in the Baptist churches. So that could take a while.
Come on, Al. I saw you had Disco Sunday last week.
We're always wondering what's going to be that next thing, whereas years ago it was, wow, you can't bring a piano into the church sanctuary. That's the kind of instrument you find in the bar. And then it gets to drums and electric guitars. Can you do that? And now what is that new thing? People wondered over the last 10 years if that was DJ stuff, if that was spin and vinyl in a church service or things like that. Or now where you have like bands or worship teams that are doing that whole electronic feel, loops and stuff. Can you do that? Is it distracting? Or does it work with worship music?
Yeah, I'd be curious just to pick up on that a little bit. You know, we from a history perspective, we see the trends in the church. They do these rolling patterns, right? And coming out of the high Middle Ages and the strong Anglo-Catholic worship that was going on in England, there's a real sense of disconnection from common people. They didn't really understand what was going on. They didn't really participate in what was going on. And the Puritan sweep came in, and that went in the opposite direction. But their primary motivation was to get rid of clutter
and emphasized simplicity so that all people could participate. Now, you know, obviously, if we know anything about the Puritans, you know, they wouldn't let you have an organ in church. So, you know, we kind of swung back a little bit. But with the different changes that you're talking about there and that we all see happening, do you think we're in a good track for, you know, speaking into our culture? Or are we in danger at times of getting into that disconnect again where there's just too much going on, too much clutter?
Yeah, it's probably likely the pendulum's going to continue to swing back and forth with that type of thing. Even where, say, a lot of churches over the last 5 years have done the model of, hey, you know, let's take a song from the radio, a mainstream song, and let's put it at the beginning of the service. The idea being that if people are coming in who are not used to coming to church, they'll hear that song and they'll go, hey, I know the song. And we've done that a lot at my church, but we're starting to swing back the other way because we're starting to hear from people who would say, hey, I'm visiting your church, and I expect that I'm going to hear church songs. Mm. Why are you playing stuff off the radio? If I wanted to hear that, I'd go to the bar, or I'll go to a concert. So I'm coming to church because I want to do church stuff. Mm-hmm. So you're not offending me by playing a hymn or some modern worship song that talks all about Jesus because I'm coming to church.
Wasn't it a famous sort of quote in that Martin Luther, Charles Wesley, when they were looking for the music that they wanted to set their hymns to, this good theological stuff, they actually went to contemporary sources, even to pub songs, and they were setting contemporary music to with Christian lyrics. Isn't that true?
Yeah, you hear stories about that happening, and then we continue to do that. I mean, it was about 10 years ago with Camp Quantos where we took the song 500 Miles, Proclaimers, right. Great song. It's been out there in the late 80s, and it keeps popping up in movies, and we thought, there's a song that we could tweak the words a little bit and make it be about following God, but it's a song that just it's out there so people know it. So people mm-hmm. would come in and go, hey, yeah. Like our campers would come in and go, I'm new here. I don't know any of the songs. Oh, I think I've heard this song before. And I remember then when we took that song and recorded a cover of it, and then a year or two later, the song, not our version, but the original popped up like as a Molson Canadian commercial, so a beer ad. And we had some people saying to us, hey, what are you going to do now? I don't think you can do that song anymore. And we'd say, why not? And they'd say, well, it's being used in a beer ad. And I'm like, great. More kids will know the song when they come to camp, and we'll use that.
Can I ask you a more theological question? Mm-hmm. When you look at your role as a worship leader, the biblical role of a worship leader, going back to, I look all the way back to the priestly role, to the actual people who were bringing people to worship. There were rules and there were regulations for the Israelites. God kind of threw all that out the window in the New Testament, but he still gave us the idea of orderly worship, but he said it's in spirit and in truth. When you walk into a church, or when you're in your own church, or you're in your element as a worship leader, what do you see your biblical role at? I know me, I'm a preacher, so I know my role. As the preacher, the declared word of God, I stand there, this is the Bible, and this is what it means. What do you see?
Well, I think there's a lot of pressure on worship leaders because it's not just the music. And that depends, too, if you how you want to define the role. I know for a lot of times we have to, within churches, try and convince the worship leaders that they actually are more than just leading music. That's more than their role. And that goes to the whole thing of even trying to teach people out there that, hey, in the church service, it's not just the music that's worship. Because sometimes we get into this thing of thinking like, oh, now it's worship time because we're doing music. Mm-hmm. Earlier when that guy got up and read a passage of scripture, oh, that wasn't worship. Or now that we are bringing some of the kids forward and telling them a story and praying for them, that's not worship. Now that the worship team has come up with the worship leader, we're worshiping. So. Mm-hmm. Part of that is trying to convince people that it's more than just the music. But then as a worship leader, trying to work with people for them to understand that you're not just leading worship when you walk up there with your worship team. If you're trying to set a tone walking into the church building that day, it's going to be how you talk to people. It's going to be how you interact with people. So that does put, more pressure on a worship leader, but also in a way, that's pressure on us as people following Jesus. We don't just worship God in the church service. So you can't intentionally be a jerk all week and then show up on Sunday and lead that time of worship and then go back to being a jerk, because then there's a disconnect.
I never do that intentionally. I want you all to know that. Yeah, it's not an intentional thing.
You know, one of the things when we think from a biblical perspective, and I appreciate you bringing that up, because we should always think of it as believers, as Christians. We are called the New Testament saints. We're part of the kingdom of God. And so our life is really a life of worship. And Christian theologians have typically spoken of the three realms of worship. There's the gathered worship of the Sunday service, as it were, our corporate worship. There's family worship in which, you know, there's biblical injunctions for parents to train their children. And then there's personal worship. And I think today, it's probably all of our fault as leaders, really, but we don't necessarily do a good job of helping people to understand that. So we do get that limit where people truly think, and I've talked to them, just the music portion of just the gathered service is worship. And the rest of my life, even listening to a sermon or a scripture reading or praying in church, that's some cognitive thing, that's some work thing. So when you think about it, what is worship? What is it that would then fill our lives and then come together at that corporate service?
Well, and even then, it's only the songs that they like.
Yeah, right? Well, so fair.
It's not even all five songs. It's like only two of the songs during that time.
Well, sometimes that comes up, you know, if someone mentions that they really dislike a certain song, and hey, worship leader, could we never play that song again, please?
Shine, Jesus, shine.
Sure, and you know, there's tons of reasons for that stuff.
I never got anything out of that song.
And sometimes, well, part of that, when you're talking about the community gathering to worship, you know, you're not going to like all the songs, but that understanding of maybe someone else in the crowd does, and they do connect with that song, it helps them focus on God, it reminds them of God's goodness and all that. And so, I mean, I can take comfort in that because I really don't want to do Shine, Jesus, Shine again. But but there are times with these reasons behind it to go, okay, maybe I do.
But we could stand together and just say that song should be removed from all course books. Okay,
see, as a pastor, I can echo this and I can say I want my people to come to corporate and listen to the sermon. I want them to go with their family and read the Bible together, and I want them to have personal devotions. So as a worship leader, for you to be able to say, you know, I want them to worship corporately when they show up the whole service. I want them to worship with their family, and I want them to worship privately. How do you educate people to do that?
That's tough when you got five songs and you're only supposed to talk in front of two of them. Sometimes, too, worship leaders either say a lot, probably too much, or they say very little. So I think sometimes with that, worship leaders need to spend some time ahead of time thinking about what they're going to say. And if it's some of those things that they want to communicate, well, then you got to come up with a way to say that brief, hopefully connects to a song to back that up, or if you happen to know what the main preacher is going to be talking about, and there's a way to connect that, those ideas that you just mentioned, if you could try and connect them to the message, that'd be great.
The best thing to do is find out what the sermon's main points are and then state them, all the conclusions, really quickly between the songs. That way the pastor doesn't really have to...
Steal the preacher's thunder.
No, you know what? It's interesting to me because historically, again, music had to be brought back into the church as part of the revitalization, reformation of the Christian experience. And people didn't know what to do. And what churches did was they actually had training times. You would come to church and practice because they saw worship, of course, you know, Psalm 29:2 or 1 Chronicles 12:29, ascribe to the Lord the glory, do his name, worship the Lord in the splendor of holiness. God is the audience of worship. And so they said, we got to prepare to worship God. So they had the whole church come out, and they would have Friday nights, and they would train them. This is how the music works. This is how your part in the music works. This is how it fits into the flow of the service. And then they would encourage people, particularly the fathers, to take that music home and say, sing this with your kids. Sing this with your wife. And then when we come together, we are coming together knowledgeable, prepared. And I wonder if something like that is almost needed again today, because I sense so much of that, a bit of that disconnected idea.
Wow, that would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would help communicate that it's not just the church service on Sunday that we do this.
I was really lucky when I was living in Edmonton that several churches helped me go to like Breakforth, which is a worship leaders from the media guy to the guy that just plays one song to frontman for big churches, you know, worship leaders. And it was a place that talked a lot about worship as a big thing, as the big picture of worship and how every part leads into that. And got a bit of that there, of that worship is should be a 24/7 thing. We should worship God in everything we do. We look outside here, we see the deer. We worship him for building, you know, making these beautiful animals in the ocean, and we should worship him in every moment of our days. I think that's where the continuous prayer that Paul speaks about, I think that's really where it is, that we should see God in everything and have that active communication with him.
Mm. Ross, I have a great idea for your next song, just thinking of these deer. Why don't you make an analogy about how deers long for water, and that could be something similar to our spiritual longings.
But we should make it seem like it's really old. So
yeah.
Add old English to it. So don't say as a deer pants, but panteth.
Oh, there you go.
Whoa.
No, but here's a segue to you, because you're mentioning the training aspect of things. This is not so much then worship music within churches, but thinking about the contemporary Christian music scene. This past weekend at Camp Kwanos, Mark Batten was our speaker. Mark is a children's pastor in Greater Vancouver, and Mark was in Rhythm and News.
Okay.
So for, you know, the 90s...
I'm so excited that you even said that.
I know.
That was the first tape I ever owned, the first cassette tape I ever owned. I played that thing to death.
Get with the rhythm? Get with the
rhythm.
Yeah. The album? Yeah, there you go. Okay. Well, yeah, and Mark's a great guy and is doing a fantastic job as a children's pastor, and and Rhythm and News and Hocus Pick toured together a few times and all that. And we were just chatting a little bit on the weekend, and Mark was, in his wisdom now, to be in his 40s, to look back at this crazy thing he did in his 20s, touring around in this music group and all that. He was just mentioning the times he remembers where he would be at a church, and let's say you're going to do a concert, so the youth group gets Rhythm and News up to do like a question and answer time. He says, yeah, most of the time the question is about their music and things like that. But there are a lot of times, he said, where they would start asking these deep theological questions and sort of punting that to the band or to the group. And Mark said, man, thinking about some of the things we said, we were in our early 20s. We hadn't gone to Bible school. We're musicians traveling on the road. He's going, we should not have answered those questions. But they really felt the pressure at the time. He says now he wishes they had said, that's a great question, and I don't know the answer. And maybe steering them back to what I can tell you about this is, we have a song that talks about this. And this idea of God, and that's in the song, and we think that's fantastic, but your question, I don't know the answer to it. And maybe we could talk with someone smarter than me about that.
There's a sense of which, for all of us, I think it's true, but I think maybe even more so today even than back in the 90s, where music has really become the medium that is forming our worldviews. Mm. Some of the youth that I work with today, their thinking and their phraseology is all really rooted in popular music artists today.
Well, that's why Chad sounds like Taylor Swift all the time. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm just gonna shake that off, Steve. but the point I was trying to make.
I can't tell you how often the word bootylicious comes up in his sermons. It's unbelievable.
That is not true, Al. I don't know what I was gonna say. I'm sure I had something important. What I'd really like to hear, you have a different perspective than we do, Russ. We're kind of in the grind doing this every week in our own location, and you're getting to interact with different people who are coming into camp and a little more into the whole sort of organization of worship music. If you were a prognosticator, what do you kind of see coming up ahead as far as trends, dangers that we should be aware of, or strengths that you think the next wave we could get onto would be?
Dangerous stuff coming up in music?
Just in general. You know, we talked about the historical trends like this a little bit here, but there's new artists that we don't know about. There's new philosophies of worship that you might have come across. If you were just to look ahead and say, in 5 years, the church is going to be filled with this problem because I can see this coming through these steps.
Well, let me tag on to that. I mean, we're seeing Christian artists now. Some of them are flaming out completely. Others are turning into heretics. And you kind of go,
sure.
And you're surprised by that. And you go, okay, what the heck just happened? I thought they were totally solid. So, yeah, I completely agree. Like, as a pastor, what should I know and what should I see coming and what's the state of it now and where is it going and what should we be watching for?
Well, at first I was going to give them the more funny answer to say, like, well, I think we're in danger of having too many hipsters doing that Mumford & Sons thing at a church and thinking that's totally cool right now, whereas mainstream has gone, we've moved beyond that.
We've moved beyond Mumford.
That's what the church does. Look, contemporary music is from the 1980s, and traditional music is from the 1950s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. On the flip side of that, you know, what I appreciate in seeing some artists like Toby Mac, I think Toby Mac is great, and I see so many times where Toby Mac is, he's the one being innovative in his music. He's not catching up on a trend that's already out there in mainstream music. He's actually leading the trend. Mm-hmm. He's making stuff that you go, wow. And I think that we, hopefully we will support that rather than going, I don't get that music. Well, it's, maybe you don't get it because it's so innovative that it hasn't been done yet. Hopefully, though, you're thinking about bands that are writing music and groups that are out there. They're probably going to continue to be young people doing that as opposed to people like me in their 40s. Hopefully, we can support them well. What I like now is that when I do music for camp, there's certain people I bounce the music off of. So lyrically, I can say, can you take a look at this? And I don't want to be off base in this song. And I don't remember having that as much as a young artist. I know that, you know, Hocus Pocus being signed to Christian music labels, we would be working with Christians, so when we pitch to our A&R guy or our main guy at the record company, here's five new songs. Hopefully they were listening to the music and asking those questions. What are these guys saying in the music? Is it theologically sound? Are they saying anything that's weird, that's going to throw people off in their faith?
Okay, were they? Honestly, like, were they? Because we've heard some real crazy crap come out of CCA, like some stuff that doesn't belong in church. Mm. So were they?
I don't remember any specific.
Did you ever get asked, like, hey, we noticed this, and we noticed that doesn't agree with the Bible, or we noticed you said this, and that's really neat that you agreed with the Bible in that way, or did that ever come up?
I think some of that came up, but I if I could go back, I would have probably involved more people from my own church in that to say, hey, could you just take a look at these songs and let me know if there's any red flags or you think any incomplete thoughts or stuff that's going to confuse people, whether that was pastors in my church or just people I trusted and respected. When you have fellows like yourselves who have studied well and gone to school and you've got some great training, and I would love to draw off of that. I think that's a smart move for artists to do.
See, I wonder from a church perspective, too, like, obviously your average pastor, you don't have a traveling Christian band that happens to have some affiliation to church, but because we do have people that will be coming up that may get involved in that. How do you think as a church we can be supportive of people? You know, you got a 20-year-old that I want to be the rock star worship band leader, but he also has great passion, great ideas, is going to do something and have an impact. How does the church come alongside that person and help them? Because they're going to be traveling, leaving. You know, they're not really going to be around. It's a challenge.
It's a great question.
Yeah, you want to find ways to hopefully come alongside that person and support them. So whether they've got a great small group in the church that does that, or you've got like a mentoring type of thing, that'd be great to just guide that person along. I mean, that's the weird thing about going and just being in a band is that it's a strange thing that you are getting on a stage and people are looking at you. And what do you do with that? Do you take that attention and then put your self-worth in it? Because that's very dangerous. I often tell, when we have musicians at camp, when we do music at Camp Quantos, we make up our bands, our music teams or worship teams, out of the staff that we have. So it could be people that are counseling or the guy is doing water ski instruction. They come in and we make these bands. And I often will try to tell these guys, like, you're going to get more attention from campers just because you are in this music team. That's really superficial. Don't put your self-worth in that, okay? But at the same time, because now people are looking to you because you're in this band, they're going to give you more attention. Take that superficial thing and try to pull something good out of it, in that if you are, I don't want to say only the water ski instructor, but if you're walking around and you're the water ski instructor, you might go and try and talk to those kids, and they might not be interested in talking to you because they don't go down to the beach, they don't water ski, they don't think you're cool. But now because you're the drummer and you go and talk to these guys, they want to talk to you. So take that don't take the attention from them and put your self-worth in that, but take that superficial thing and go, now these guys want to talk to me because I'm the drummer. I'm going to show interest in these guys. I'm going to show them love. I'm going to – if they walk away from this going, that's neat because that – I'm going to use the air quotes here. The famous guy, the drummer, he was really interested in us. He really wanted to hear about me and all that. That's showing them love and attention, and I want my teams to do that. So go back to your question, what kind of – hopefully we can try and do some of that stuff. If you had someone in your church who was getting into being in a band, is help them avoid the pitfall of going, I'm going to just love this attention that I get from being this band guy. Mm-hmm. Don't put your self-worth in that. But try and take the time and attention you get from people and steer it back on them and showing them God's love somehow.
And can I ask, who did you, while you were touring, and you, who held you accountable, and how were you being discipled, and how did you not get the big head and go crazy and all that stuff?
Or did you? You know.
Or did you? Well, I just, yeah. Some few key people in my church that I would meet with and would just help keep me grounded and all that. And I know that for me, too, like it's, I'm actually more of an introverted person, mm-hmm. Which is an odd mix when you're in a band, which is a very extroverted type of situation. I've always found ways to hopefully use the introverted part of me to my advantage in that I actually don't really like being on stage. And I don't always like the attention of feeling like people are looking at me, which is an odd thing because it's I do a lot of it.
It's your job.
Yeah. And maybe that's helped me to not put my self-worth in it or really soak it up and enjoy it because it kind of, if anything, after being in front of a lot of people, I need the downtime to go be on my own or not be in front of people. So that's helped. But,
really yeah,
but not everyone is that way. Not everyone is introverted. So for the extroverted people who draw a lot of energy and get pumped up from being in front of people, still just to try and help them see that, like, okay, again, the attention that you're getting, don't let that define who you are because it's fleeting and it's not reality.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Thank you. Hey, you know what? Okay, we're gonna get going here. I will cover you as you go. I'll take out at least 4 or 5 deer. Steve, you go first. But before we make a break for it, I want to hear the book. We love books here. So what's your book? What's your go-to book?
A go-to book.
Yep. Can't say the Bible.
Yes, yeah. The one rule.
Really, on this show, the Bible's out? Wow. I got to say, a life-changing book for me was Fierce Conversations. Susan, and I can't remember her last name, but it was a pastor who showed me this book, and it was really about the kind of conversations you have with people and some techniques for really getting to the heart of a conversation and knowing that not all conversations are going to be easy, but that's okay, and really digging in that way. And a lot of it is showing people that you care. And so I found that book was life-changing, and it is a go-to book. There's a lot of highlighted parts in that book that I'll revisit.
Awesome.
Make that Susan Scott. I've seen that book.
Susan Scott. Okay.
Okay, are we ready? Okay, on the count of 3. 1, 2, 3, go!
Go, 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 go!
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 Those aren't raisins.
Steve can't keep up with us. Keep going. They'll take
you. Leave him behind!
Look in the eyes! They want you to look in the eyes.
This has been Carnivore Theology with Chad, Al, and Steve. Thank you for listening today as we discuss contemporary worship with our special guest, Russ Smith. To find out more about Carnivore Theology, or if you have any topics or questions you want us to cover on upcoming episodes, let us know by visiting us on our website, www.carnivoretheology.com. If you like what we're doing, please like us on Facebook, rate and subscribe to us on iTunes, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. We encourage you to connect with your local biblical church and keep your eyes on the cross.